Our next item is conditional use number 1923, Donna Massey. Gentlemen, this lies in my vast area of responsibility, and I think this is a situation that we might see more of as time goes on. I don't think this is a case where anybody's trying to profit from renting a space out or anything of that nature. It's simply a family that's trying to accommodate their members as they grow older. And I think a very clearly and worded recommendation for approval could be done. Certainly, it has to be restricted to Mrs. Massey's use and the use of her family in the other portion, which Mr. Johnson pointed out. Then in the motion, we probably have to have some language about the fact that they need to be family members, because when you read it, you could have somebody else, some unrelated person in the main part of the house, as long as Mrs. Massey was in the on the premises somewhere. So it really, I think, needs to be made clear that it's to accommodate family members in both instances. And if it is restricted to her use and the conditional use goes away when she goes away, I think we will have accomplished what they've asked for without violating the intent or the spirit of the ordinance. So I would suggest that to you. Anyway, anyone else want to express an opinion?
I just want to clarify one issue, Mr. Chairman, if I can. I know we had quite a bit of discussion regarding the homeowners association rules and restricted covenants on the lot or lots in that development. But Mr. Robertson, even if we were to give the conditional use approval, or the county council eventually approved it, if that was the case, the homeowners association covenants are still pertinent. It wouldn't really, we can't trump the homeowners association. So that would leave the options open to Mrs. Massey and the homeowners association to collectively settle this amongst themselves. Or
if need be, yeah.
Or if they chose not to, just because we acted favorably wouldn't dictate the outcome to the homeowners association. It still leaves it in their hands rather than us preempting the process. So, you know, I tend to agree with you, Mr. Chairman, that, you know, a favorable action leaves the options open without dictating the outcome, and then let them see if they can't work it out among themselves.
Thank you. And, Mr. Chairman, I would like to chime in here if I might.
Sure.
If I may have the floor. We had this, it's my understanding, we had this public hearing because what the applicant is requesting, a multifamily two-dwelling structure, is prohibited by the zoning ordinance that does not prohibit the applicant from coming before us and making an application for that. We had the public hearing. We deferred and listened to Mr. Robertson's findings as to the restrictions and covenants that do exist and are pertaining to this site and to the surrounding neighborhood that is in adjacency to the site. We are being asked to recommend approval for a multifamily two-dwelling structure that does not, in its current format, exist. As stated by the applicant, the kitchen and cooking facilities are not in place, nor were they in place previously. Gentlemen, we are not being asked forgiveness of a violation. We are being asked to allow the creation of a multifamily structure that is prohibited by the recorded restrictions and covenants from being allowed. These restrictions and covenants were recorded 10 years prior to the applicant purchasing the property. The restrictions and covenants were public record as indicated by the 9 signatures on a petition that was in opposition to the applications. Those restrictions and covenants were relied on by the opposition and by all parties to sales of those lands as to what could and could not be created upon those lands. At the public hearing, the applicant could provide no evidence of this multifamily two-dwelling structure being in conformity to the nature of the surrounding neighborhood. Mr. Robertson, I believe, had said that county council gives a lot of consideration to conformity when the council deals in matters of restrictions and covenants. The applicant, and this disturbed me, the applicant stated her intention to deed the property to another family member, resulting in her perhaps residing in the created smaller living unit. And it hearkened me to think, how many times have we heard Mr. Fuquay or Mr. Schrader or Mr. Byard as examples tell the commission that we must obey the ordinances that are in effect at the time of the application and the public hearing? We have been cautioned not to legislate, but if we find an ordinance to be contrary or in need of amendment, to do so. But we must honor the ordinance or finding a fact as to its enforcement in the present time, even if this means submerging our individual opinions as to what the law ought to be. The commission must respect the majesty of the law. The public needs to be able to rely on this being so. The signers of the petition relied on these restrictions and covenants, and while one of those signers, Mr. Dennis Stordahl, indicated he could be comfortable with a family members only type condition on an approval recommendation, Mr. Stordahl indicated not once but twice that he did not speak for anyone other than himself. No one else expressed a comfort level with a family members only condition on an approval recommendation. I'd like to say that, gentlemen, we have a difficult decision to make. Many times I myself, and perhaps you as well, have had to hold your nose and vote for approval of an application. Why? Because it was the proper and binding thing to do. This may be a time when I have to hold my nose and vote for denial for the same reason. I feel as though we have spent a lot of energy on this application, the same energy we try to bring to each application and hearing that is brought before us. We're a very good commission, and I will respect the vote no matter the outcome.
Just 2 points, Mr. Chairman, if I could, on that. I don't like the clarification that somehow this is prohibited by code. I think, Mr. Smith, I don't think that's an accurate statement. It's not a permitted use under the zoning code, but an applicant has the right to apply for conditional use. I think to say that somehow it's not allowed.
I thought I brought that out at the beginning.
Yeah, well, you suggested.
Please clarify that.
Yeah, you suggested that it was prohibited or somehow we were violating the code, I think was at least how I heard that. And I don't want the public to somehow assume that if any conditional use is approved, it's somehow in derogation of the zoning code, because that's the purpose behind conditional use. So I want to make sure that's clear. The second thing is, with restrictive covenants, you know, as I've said all along, you know, the county, and I think Mr. Ross brought this up, the county's not bound by those. I mean, those are contractual, you know, and they're not for the benefit of the county, and the county is not obligated to, you know, abide by those restrictive covenants because the county's not a party to them. That doesn't mean that a private property owner wouldn't have the right to seek enforcement of those covenants or decide to waive them or whatever. As I mentioned, and I want to clarify this wasn't limited to county council. I think that, you know, what I said was that the county should look at them and give them the weight that they're entitled to, you know, to have given to them during the public hearing, you know, and certainly, you know, that's something that should be taken into account. And I think what I said was that that's part of the overall character of the community that should be taken into account. And I think that's what you highlighted. But the point of all that is that I think it's not limited to county council. It's also planning and zoning. We're not bound by them, but certainly they're part of the overall character of the community or neighborhood. So.
Thank you, Mr. Robertson, for those remarks. We certainly want to be as accurate as possible. And I'm sure everyone heard what you said. Okay. That's all I have, gentlemen.
All right. Thank you, sir. Gentlemen, anyone else?
If I'm intended to agree, probably not as lengthy as Mr. Smith's comments. Coming off of Falsby, there's a lot of similarization between those two, the Falsby houses.
Between 24?
No, between Milton and Ellendale.
When we denied the change, requested change?
That we put in a gave them a conditional use to the family.
For family, right?
For family only.
And family only. And then there was real hardship, and they wanted to sell the house. I looked at it, and I have a hard time denying, approving this one and denying that.
But remember, that one wasn't, the first time was Folmsbee, just again, so we got it right. The first time was approved for Folmsbee,
right,
limited to family, because that's how they presented it. I mean, that's how they came forward on Folmsbee. They came then more recently and asked for a change, said circumstances had changed. We want to continue multifamily, but eliminate the restriction to family, and that was denied.
And I think that kind of speaks to this whole issue. I think we've set the precedent and let everybody know that, you know, in these instances where it's a family issue, it might be appropriate. But don't come back 5 years later thinking that you're going to get the rest of it. And I think we've probably made that pretty clear from our actions. I understand what you're saying, but I think there's a major difference between the two is that this is the first time around for this one, and it was the second time around for Folmsbee. So,
I believe Folmsbee was the original public hearing was in response to a violation. Though wasn't the house already divvied up, or did it not have the living units, including the kitchen and such?
Yeah,
I don't have the following, but I believe that's right.
Mr. Smith, the trouble with that is that if we start making decisions on that basis, then essentially what we're saying to people is go out and violate, do the wrong thing, come in and ask forgiveness, and we're going to let it slide. That's what concerns me about that. I think the fact that these folks wanted to do the right thing, came here without having done all that, didn't wait for somebody to tell on them or send them a violation, speaks very highly of their character and their intent to be good citizens and conform to the law. So I of all of your arguments, I find that one to be the most one that concerns me the most. I just don't think that on that basis we're encouraging people to wait till they're violated and then come in and we're going to let you have it anyway.
I'm not sure that Folmsbee, I'm looking at the minutes on that one, that was a violation. It was, the minutes say that the dwelling exists and contained three living units, and as of 2009, the apartments were built 17 years ago and had been occupied by family members. They said that a friend told them they needed a conditional use, so they applied. There's nothing in the record, not that it really matters, but there's nothing in the record that says that they were violated.
Not a formal violation.
Yeah.
It came in based on the instruction.
Right.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this is about as clear as dishwater for the commission, but I you know, and there's obviously good reasons on both sides, and I have to agree with a lot of Mr. Smith's reasoning. At the same time, I've got to agree with a lot of yours. In this situation, part of the reason why I would lean towards approval is the fact that the house is actually on a public street. It's not inside of a developed subdivision.
Yeah.
The second thing is that we do have permissions in some zones that where you can have a detached garage apartment. Well, what are we going to do? Make the people take a chainsaw and cut a hole in the roof so it's detached? And I'm like, I agree with you, Mr. Chairman, that I think we're going to find a lot of families out of necessity or are going to be cohabiting a building, and to create some sense of privacy, you create a kitchenette or whatever. And in this case, the house, the garage is attached, so it doesn't look like a separate apartment building. It looks like it's just part of an existing building. So, from an aesthetic view, it doesn't look like an apartment complex. It just looks like a home. Now, maybe there's going to be more cars there. All the better for not being inside the development, because there's no place to park in most of these developments. I think that Folmsbee certainly was an issue, and I think that the commission correctly dealt with that when it came before us, that it was approved for family members only, and when they were trying to sell it and obviously making it more appealing to sell it as an apartment building rather than as a house, the commission acted correctly and denied it, because the only primary reason for us approving it was for family. So if there's a way we can accommodate family members, whether it's for economic reasons or for security reasons or health reasons, I think that the commission has to be understanding and considerate of those issues. And I'm agree with you. I think we're going to see more of these. And that's, and so from my perspective, that's one of the reasons why we have a conditional use, you know, so that we can address those special situations.
Anyone else?
Well, I certainly welcome the opportunity for the commission at any time to exercise the best judgment and all that they can. I'm saying that sometimes that judgment seemed to have been taken out of our hands. I gave a lot of weight to the recorded restrictions and covenants, and I think if we're making some assumptions as to what the opposition to this project was directed at, I think we also are entitled to make an assumption as to what their silence said to us when no one else besides Mr. Stordahl came out and said that they would be comfortable with a family member only condition. But gentlemen, this is a good commission. I'll respect the vote no matter how it goes. We, in my opinion, always make the best decisions possible. So,
thank you, sir. Okay, anyone want to make a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we recommend approval of conditional use 1923 for Donna Massey for a multifamily dwelling structure of 2 units based on the record made at the public hearing and for the following reasons. One, the applicant owns the existing structure, which she desires to use as 2 separate dwelling units while she occupies one of them. With the conditions placed upon this use, it will be limited to the applicant and her family as long as they occupy one of the units. The use will not have any significant impact on roadways or traffic. Although there was opposition to proposed use, that opposition appeared to be directed against the possibility that both units would become rental units and occupied by unrelated parties and not the applicant or her family. This recommendation is subject to the following conditions. A, only 2 units shall be permitted and they shall be located within the existing structure. B, the units shall be occupied by the applicant Donna Massey and her family in the event that she or her family no longer occupy a unit on the property as their residence, this conditional use shall automatically terminate. C, the property may be subject to restrictive covenants concerning the proposed use. The county is not a party to nor governed by those restrictions. This recommendation should not be construed to override any applicable restrictions or the rights of the property owners to enforce them. And D, the final site plan shall be subject to the review and approval of the Planning and Zoning Commission.
Question, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
By family, are we talking about immediate family? Yeah, in terms of children, grandparents, aunts, uncles, or are we talking, you know, I got a lot of cousins in this county. Some of them are real close and some of them don't want to know me, but.
Well, you know, I don't think that we should be too fine a point on it. I really believe that what Mrs. Massey is trying to do, and I think the chairman kind of noted this, is she's trying to plan ahead for some of her aging issues so she'll have family members nearby. I think we're going to be, I agree with the chair that we're going to be seeing a lot of this as time goes by and as those of us that have had to put our family members in different assisted living and health facilities are maybe less than satisfied with the outcome and would like to try a different alternative. And one of those alternatives is to, you know, add a studio apartment for ourselves as our spouses pass and try to get family to live nearby, whether they be sons, daughters, grandchildren, whoever, actually people that are capable and willing. So in answer to your question, Mr. Johnson, I think we should leave that up to the Homeowners Association to decide.
Is there a Homeowners Association? If this is a strip lot?
It's unclear from the restrictions whether there's a formal homeowners association, and it certainly wasn't made part of the record that there is. The restrictions do cover this lot. I mean, it's identified on the plot. When you look at the plot that refers to it, it's a strip of, I don't know, 7 or 8 lots on the county road And then there's a couple, there's another plot that's referred and a reference in the restrictions as well, which is the lots behind it.
Shouldn't we take the lead and say who the family members are? If we've got this argument that the restrictions and covenants and all are subordinate and we're not getting mixed up in that, we don't want a bad enforcement for this, right? We want to make it as easy for Mr. Lang's department as possible to go there and say, who is a family member?
It's be hard to enforce anyway.
Well,
he gave us a definition of family last time.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the burden would be on, if it's going to get approved, the burden would be on the homeowner to show that, you know, that they are family. If there's a question about whether they're family or not, the burden's going to be on them. If they're violated, they'll have to come in with some proof that they're family. I mean, I don't know that, somebody might have suggested, and I forget who it was, but that we want to get into talking about whether it's got to be, you know, brothers, sisters, kids, you know, how far removed.
It seems clear to me that the motion is limited to the Massey family. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Your understanding?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like some other family can come in with some other situation. It's this family, and most specifically, it's Mrs. Massey, apparently. Mm-hmm. So I think we're fairly circumscribed there. We don't have a second, gentlemen, so we're having an awful lot of discussion for not having a second.
I didn't know, Mr. Chairman, we're supposed to have discussion before or after.
Well, according to Mason's rules, you have discussion before the second, and that is actually what governs our procedures here, which is different from Robert's rules, which you have to have a second before you can discuss it. Now, how many of you knew that before tonight? There you go. One guy in the back. Good.
Well, that's okay. Why you're the chairman.
That's right. That's why I get the big bucks.
That's right.
All right, so we still don't have a second.
I'll second the motion.
All right, then. It's been moved and seconded to recommend approval of conditional use number 1923, Donna Massey, for the reasons and with the conditions stated in the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
Okay, we're going to call the roll. Mr. Ross, how do you vote?
Yes.
Aye. Mr. Smith?
Nay.
Mr. Johnson?
Yes.
Mr. Burton?
Nay.
Okay. The chair votes yes. The motion carries 3-2. Our next item is conditional use number 1924, Colony Pool Service.